Featuring both known and lesser-known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
The Office of VP Research offers undergraduate students meaningful opportunities to engage in discovery-based learning and to develop research and presentation skills through their Undergraduate Student Summer Research Fellowship and the Undergraduate Student Research Award. Do you self-identify as a Black or Indigenous person? There are allocated funds through the USRA to help address the disproportionate underfunding of Black and Indigenous scholars at the undergraduate level. All projects are paid full-time work under the guidance of a faculty researcher and run from May through August. Application intake and deadlines are set by each department, so contact your department supervisor today. Application intake and deadlines are set by each department, so contact your department or supervisor today. Access the website to learn more, queensu.ca/VPR/resources/undergraduate. For general inquiries, contact Tracy Allen at allent@queensu.ca.
This episode of the Kingston Live podcast is brought to you by Grand On Stage. Get the most out of the Kingston Grand Theatre experience with access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand On Stage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
If there's a single most important day in Kingston's music history, it's August 20th, 2016. That's the night when all eyes in Canada turned to our city as the Tragically Hip took to the stage for their final concert. 11.7 million viewers, 4.3 million households tuning into the television broadcast, 22,000 watching in Market Square and a sold-out arena, all bearing witness to the bittersweet farewell concert of a band beloved across Canada. And in the final moments of the show, the opening chords to Ahead by a Century rang across the country, closing the band's final chapter. The story of that song starts with guitarist, singer, and songwriter Paul Langlois.
The best songs are honest, and the best songs are true, and the best songs that I can write involve me and my thoughts.
This is Kingston Live. Despite technically being the newest member of the Hip, having joined the band 2 years after their formation in 1984, Paul's contributions were the final ingredient that made the Hip the Hip. Between his distinctive backing vocals and his rhythm guitar work, Paul completed the band and co-wrote many of the band's most venerated tracks. Though the Hip as a band is concluded, Paul carries on both in music and as a member of the community. It's not unusual to catch him in the crowd at a show or a local event. And with the release of a new record, you might catch him on stage, too. Smooth Rock Falls is Paul's fourth solo record, and it's a record that finds him looking back on his life and the lives of his family and friends. Unsurprisingly, there's a lot of the Hip sound on the new record, which is to say, it sounds quintessentially Paul Langlois. Today we sit down with Paul to talk solo songwriting, local music, and the enduring legacy of the Hip in Kingston. Hello, this is Kingston Live. It's John.
And Ange.
And we're very happy to welcome Mr. Paul Langlois.
Hello, glad to be here with you too.
Thank you for being with us today. You have a new album that has just come out. Came out a little over a month ago online.
Yes, it did. Well, it's streaming right now on all the things, which is actually kind of a relief. And yeah, pretty happy with it. Sort of gone back to Paul Langlois. The last record I did was called Paul Langlois Band. I didn't like the name that much. I would have preferred the Paul Langlois Band, but it was just Paul Langlois Band. I don't know how I got convinced into that one, but it's the same band. So I broke it to the band as we were recording. I'm going back to Paul Langlois because my first two solo records were just Paul Langlois, mm-hmm. and I had a band on one of them. Anyway, it just sounded like a wedding band or something, and and so it's back to that, but it's the same guys, and yeah, really happy with it. And the CDs and vinyl take longer than they used to in this business. And
yeah, those are coming. I think those are, you can order them right now. Is that correct?
You can order them, yeah. And I think in general, they'll come out maybe end of April.
It's called Smooth Rock Falls. Where'd that title come from? Inspiration.
Well, that's where my dad grew up, and it's north of Cochrane, but it's north of Timmins on the same highway, L11. And he grew up there and then came to Queens. He didn't learn English until like high school. But a little paper mill town, and we went up there a couple of times, and I just always thought the name was cool, Smooth Rock Falls. And, you know, he talked a lot about his childhood and that town. And so I thought, okay, well, why don't I call it that?
It's fitting, it seems.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you know, there's because there are, both my parents died in the last couple of years, and there's songs that are kind of inspired, I guess, by those two. So I thought it was fitting. Ironically, last night I found there's a song called Smooth Rock Falls. Must be from a guy from Smooth Rock Falls. I hope he's not angry with me, but there's no song called Smooth Rock Falls on this record.
So you just thought you'd do all the work and then look it up, Paul? What the heck?
Well, I didn't even, I thought, what if the town, what if it bothers the mayor or something of Smooth Rock? And
I don't think Paul Langlois could bother the mayor of any Canadian town.
And your music has a history of city name dropping as well.
Well, yes.
Has that ever gotten into any trouble?
I mean, no, but well, certainly Bob Cajun loved it.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That put them on the map, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure they don't mind. Smooth Rock Falls was for sale about 15 years ago. A guy in my band at the time, like a side project, Campfire Liars Club, Joe Carscallon, called me one day and he said, hey, Smooth Rock Falls is for sale. You should buy it. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I can't afford to buy Smooth Rock Falls. Anyway, someone did.
Oh.
And now, you know, to try and revitalize the town, and the paper mill's gone. But I think it's kind of, a lot of people have settled there, and it's a town that's doing well. So I do hope they're happy about my record and not angry. But I haven't heard anything, so I think it's fine.
I understand Smooth Rock Falls, you did this on the floor in 3 days. Is that correct?
That's very close to correct.
Yeah.
I'd say a total of 4 days, I think. And then mixing it, yeah, a couple of us, me and Greg Ball, who's in the band and a good friend, he and I went out to mix. The other guys couldn't make it with our engineer, Niles Spencer. And I was in a sort of cutting mood, like, so I was cutting out intros and outros and, you know, I was just trying to get to the point. And, you know, we did that and the rest of the band, they didn't like it. One rule of the studio is you don't, if you're not there, you don't like it. You know, it's if they recorded something else, person that's not there, their tendency will be to certainly not like it at first. Like, what were you thinking there? And anyway, but they were right. And so we had to go mix again. So it was a bit of a process. But we did it all out at the Bathhouse, the Hip Studio. And yeah, I just, I don't know. The songs just came out. And the band is really good. You know, they're very much on their toes. And they can learn songs quickly. And you know, we did some rehearsing, but there were some that were written out there as we were recording. And, yeah, it was a great experience.
Tell me about Morning Guy, Night Guy.
I was just going to ask about that. Yeah.
That tune stuck out to me a little bit.
Yeah, there's kind of like a dialogue of sorts happening there. Yeah. What's going on in that song?
Well, that one I wrote last minute. That was the last song. Last minute I went out to the breezeway at the studio and, you know, in about an hour, because I was desperate to have a 10th song. Yeah, the thought just crossed my mind that there's two of me, Morning Guy and a Night Guy. You know, I like them both, but the Morning Guy doesn't like the Night Guy because, of course, gets pissed off when he stays up late and writes songs or writes anything or records. And, you know, so that's my tendency, and just the song is basically trying to referee the two of them and, you know, point out to the morning guy that the night guy actually does a lot for us, you know. He comes up with all the ideas. All you do is get things done in the daytime, and you should show him more respect.
I love it. The pressure that you felt and the desperation, the diamond came out.
yeah.
It was great.
And I had, you know, at the very end, it's good morning, Ralph. Good night, Sam. And I think that kind of slightly inspired me. I had that in my brain for some reason. That's a Looney Tunes thing, you know, with the sheepdog and coyote. And one is Ralph, one Sam. One is day shift, one's the night shift. So morning, Ralph. Good night, Sam. I think that was in the back of my brain.
You, eh? It's funny where you can take inspiration from so many different things, right?
Yeah, and I don't really look for it. I wait for it, and also it is actually a desperation, a deadline. Like, the best way to write a song is if you have a deadline. Hey, will you play a song at my wedding on Saturday? And it's Monday, and it's like, oh my God, okay. Like, would you write a song?
We'd like it to be very personal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if that has happened, and I would write it Friday night,
yeah.
You know, I'd just do nothing Monday to Thursday. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting subject, because I find creative people, they tend to fall into one of a couple of camps. Some people, just inspiration hits them and they run with it. And actually, we talked to your longtime bandmate, Rob, a few years ago on the podcast, mm-hmm. and he was talking about, you know, he gets up and he just applies himself and he works at it, right? There seems to be those two camps when it comes to creativity. Where do you feel you fit in?
Not in that camp.
The other one.
And the other one.
I feel you.
And I know Robbie does that, and he's very regular about it, and I think that's a great thing. Gord Downie was like that, too. He was writing constantly, taking notes kind of constantly. And, yeah, I kind of more just I wait until it's kind of like, okay, I only have 3 weeks before we're recording, so I need to write 10 songs. And so once I start, then I'm into it and I'm there. Otherwise, when I play, you know, I play guitar at home, of course, like just strumming around, fiddling with little riffs. And if I have a good one, I'll record it in GarageBand and then I'll have it and I'll go back to it. And at night, a lot of times I'll just write things in my notes and then I'll try and match them up eventually when it's time to make another record.
I noticed with your albums, they always seem to have 10 tracks. Is that deliberate, or am I just getting too nerdy here?
No, that's deliberate. Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, the hip. We liked 11 in the hip. We thought that was the magic number. There's a few records that have 11 hip records.
Mm-hmm.
I like 10. You know, it's just me, and I don't have their help. I mean, I have my band's help now, but I start my very first record I did on my own, Fix His Head, with the engineer at the time was Aaron Holmberg. Mm. So it was just me and him. And I was really there to see if I could drum. And I had a kid at home, so I knew I could drum, but I didn't know whether I could sort of have it be good enough to put a song on top of it. So I just started messing around for about 3 weekends in a row. So I did the drums and the bass, and once I had the song written, I put the vocal over anything. So I stopped at 10, just my first record. And then every record since, I just thought, okay, 10's the number. So now I have 40 songs out there in the world. It's more than enough for me. I never expected to have that many. So if I make another record, you know, with the band, I will have to be convinced by them. You know, and they are good that way, you know, that Greg said to me, I don't know, just the other day, he's like, you don't like practicing, do you? And I'm like, sure I do, yeah. I love it. He's like, no, you don't. I can tell you don't love it. I said, well, once we start, I don't like going out there and the thought of practicing, but I do enjoy it once it starts. It's like playing a show as a singer. I dread it. Dread the shit out of it.
Really?
As
was
Paul
it like
Langlois.
That as a guitarist, or that switched when you went
never
solo?
Never dreaded a hip show in my life.
Oh, wow.
That was, always looked forward to that.
Is it the singing aspect of it?
Yeah,
a little
the
bit more
thing.
Of the highlight of the, you got to chat, you got to be the...
In the middle, I'm trying to become better at it, or gradually, you know, get better at it. But it's more pressure, and that's no surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that the heat was on Gord for certain aspects of basically being the focus.
I get that because I just played my first show as a drummer, and as a stand-up comedian, I can tell you it felt so nice to sit back there and be like, whew! Isn't that nice?
Yeah, less pressure than doing stand-up.
Yeah, it was different, totally different experience. You're still on stage, you're still performing, but like that one switch in where you're standing, what microphone you're talking into can really make a difference.
Yeah, and that, you know, the guys I play with now, you know, it does feel like a team. Like, it feels like they have my back. They're very enthusiastic. They love playing. So that helps me.
Mm-hmm.
But I still, it's still a tough thing to do. You really have to get up for it. And you know, once the first chord is struck, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like the whole show, and I like it after too. It's the before where I'm saying things to myself like, why?
Well, the unpredictability of it too, because you open your mouth and you don't always know what's going to come out in those first 10 seconds or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's an energy too, like, I don't know about you, but sometimes right before a show, my mind just goes completely blank.
Yeah.
And then you're like, whoa, what happened? Am I going to remember when I get up there? But then you just get up there and you do it. You've built the muscle memory and the practice. You've done it over and over. But you never really know when, you can call it nerves, you can call it whatever you want, when that strikes, how your body is actually going to react to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. And yet you worry about exactly that, you know, what's the first word?
Yeah.
So we kings, you know, because I sort of tend to play that here. I was, as an aside, I was up in Iqaluit this past weekend, kind of as the entertainment for a charity hockey tournament. And so I played four or five songs in three or four places up there. And I played We Kings. And I was like, it was a couple hours before, but I was like, what's the first word, We Kings? And then once it was like, sundown.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just need to remember the first word and you get the rest. It kind of works that way.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, I get that. Yes. I remember when I interviewed you when I was working in radio back in the day, and you walked in the radio station from your car with a mug full of coffee, and I was like, this guy and I are going to get along just fine. Because I was the only person that I knew that did that at that time. Are you still rocking the mug in the car?
Absolutely.
Attaboy. I love that.
Yeah.
Paul, I read something you said a while back that making solo music is a bit of a challenge because you're sort of trying not to sound like the Hip, but of course you were in the Hip. Have you kind of made progress there? Do you feel like you've found your rhythm or your sound in that way?
Well, I think so, you know. I think really by not thinking about it, trying to think about it less. You know, it's just me on the first record, so it's a bit quieter, but the Hip have quiet songs. Gord and I sang a lot prior to the Hip together, and we knew that we had similar voices, quite similar ranges. Like, he can sing really low, so can I. He can go a bit higher than me. I've discovered there are a couple songs that are higher than I thought, because we kind of sprinkle them in our Paul Langlois set. There's a couple, Grace 2 is higher than I thought. There's another one that's pretty high. Anyway, so I know we have kind of semi-similar voices. You know, my guitar, I can't play any other way than how I play.
I was listening to one of the songs today. I think it was the second last one. I can't remember the name, but I remember listening and the guitar riff. I was like, oh, that's the Hip. And then I was like, well, no, that's Paul, because you are the Hip, the guitarist, right? Like, that, of course, that makes sense that would be
the you sound. Recognize that tone and that touch.
But what it was it didn't sound like, it was in no way a copy. What it was familiar. It just felt like this kind of homey, familiar, like I'm listening to this for the first time, but my soul already knows it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess I don't worry about it anymore. Yeah. I think I did at first. Unless it were like a very, very obvious. If you're talking about song number 9, that's probably as close as I've come.
Was that? Okay, yeah, it was number 9. Yeah. It was song 9, yeah.
There's Nothing Wrong, it's called.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's in B. Well, it's not really in B, is it? But it is, B minor. And, you know, we got a lot of songs in and B minor, you know.
Mm. That was the one, when I listened, the whole album was Paul Langlois, and then that 9th song, I hear a little hit there. So, yeah, interesting that you said.
I really liked There's Nothing Wrong, too. I think there was certainly that familiarity element that you're talking about, but just a nice upbeat rock song, too. Yeah, it just moved well.
I was dancing to Wrapped in a Bow. I immediately started, moving my body. I was like, I could hear this. Like, if I was out in a club or somewhere right now, I'd be the one that's, grabbing a beer and dancing on the bar.
That's great to hear.
Some good ones,
I like that one. It's kind of just me trying to remind anyone who's passed, you know, don't forget. You wrapped it all up.
Nice.
Yeah, nicely.
Yeah.
You know, stay quiet in the undertow. Like, I'm just wondering what they're doing. So just giving them a bit of advice, not that I'm an expert because I haven't died yet, but, you know, just know that you did it perfectly.
I love that.
You really nailed it kind of thing. You know, there's one song about my dad and one about my mom, and that's kind of about both of them, just ignore it a little bit. Just people I know that have passed away, it's like, you know, don't sweat it. Go away happy. You did it.
Yeah.
You did it right.
Is music part of the process for you? Like when you talk about, you know, grieving and reflecting, and is that part of it? Because I know that was at least part of the inspiration for the album.
Turns out. I didn't necessarily think that would be the process. Like when Gore died, you know, it's 8.5 years ago now. I didn't feel like doing anything music-wise at all. I just thought, okay, well, he's gone and the hip's done. And, you know, I think we were all in that kind of grieving fog for a couple of years. And then, yeah, a couple of years go by and it's like, well, what else am I going to do? I'm not going to go back to school and try something different. And then it just kind of, it's what you go through. The best songs are honest and the best songs are true, and the best songs that I can write involve me and my thoughts. If I'm like trying to write a song like Eddie's driving down the street and here comes Randy, and you know, it's like I just get lost in kind of a something that I can't believe. I need to believe the songs, and in order to do that I gotta write about it. And both parents, who were both very cool, you know, they did it right and all of it. And so it just came up again out of a need to write the songs. You know, I knew we were going in, and I didn't have the songs. And it was up to me to do it. And so they just kind of came out. And because grief's a big thing. I hadn't been through it before Gord. And then certainly, you know, with the parents. So the whole record's not about that or anything, but everything seeps into it for me. But a lot of times it's, you know, the rhyming and the sort of the coolest phrasing I can come up with naturally seems to suit those emotions or something. You know, they seem to just, like a couple of magnets where it kind of works out well. Because I'm trying to be tricky, too. You know, I like to be tricky in lyrics. And again, you know, just we used to cut in musically riffs, little tricky tricks is what we called it, like a little arrangement tricks that you wouldn't really know unless you really, really concentrated and listened. Beatles did that a little. I mean, they were a little more kind of with a middle 8, and they had a certain pattern for some of their songs, but they were tricky arrangers in a good way, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Paul, anytime we have a guest on the podcast, we play one of their tracks. We usually give them a choice. In this case, Jake told me that we're going to play Hardly Holding On.
That wouldn't have been my choice.
It wouldn't have been?
Nope.
What would your choice have been?
I mean, you can pick one. What would you like?
I can overrule them.
I like this.
How You Are, the fourth song.
And what would you like to tell us anything?
Well, that one's about my dad. And he was French, right? And I mean, he actually didn't even have an accent, but he would kind of put it on. Like, he had a big accent when he went to Queens. But gradually over life, he was very good, pretty smart, very good in English. But he would always say, "How you are," or "Where you are, I look you all over." So I managed to stick those in the song because we all were very familiar with that. And I just think it's kind of catchier and popular and a little more Hardly Holding On. I like it, but it's very gritty and...
It's kind of moody.
It's moody, yeah. It's
brooding.
Brooding.
Yeah.
How You Are is a little more up, you know. Greg Ball and Matt Mulvihill are doing these nice backups in between the the verses. So I just find it's maybe a more appealing song. But for rock radio, I think, is the reason they went. I don't have... Dad trumps Jake. I let Jake make these decisions, Jake and the record company. So, like, it's fair enough that it's How You Are wouldn't necessarily fly on a rock station, but...
But it'll fly here.
It'll fly.
And that's what we will do.
That's what I hope.
Sorry, Jake. Paul has spoken.
Kingston Live, full of rebels.
This episode of Kingston Live is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Grand Onstage takes you beyond the regular Kingston Grand Theater experience. It's a subscription option that gives you access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. That means you can customize your own individual package starting at just 4 performances. Want to bring friends? Subscriber pricing applies to their tickets too. And if your plans change, just exchange your tickets for another performance. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
You guys were really open and honest, it seemed, in the documentary that was on Prime, Tragically Hip, No Dress Rehearsal. How did you feel that turned out?
Really good. I feel really good about it. It was a grind to do, you know, the interviews, and Mike Downey did it, Gord's older brother, and I thought I was the only one that was getting ground. But then I saw the doc, and he did it to everybody. Like, he was kind of not focused on the problems, but he certainly wasn't shying away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was good. So it was more honest than even I had hoped for. It's a tough watch for me. I watched half of it at the film festival in Toronto, TIFF. They were playing the whole thing. I'm like, you're playing the whole thing? It's like 4 hours. People want that. And I'm like, who wants to? Anyway, they were right. but I watched half of it, and there was a pub next door, and I didn't come. I didn't come back after the intermission. I mean, I know how it ends.
You're like, I know how this went.
Yeah. So I didn't listen. It came out in September, and I didn't listen until the following July. I was up at Cottage, and I watched it with Joanne, my wife, and she hadn't watched it either because she couldn't make the premiere, and she just hadn't been in the right environment that she wanted to watch it. And, you know, she started crying right away. And it's just me and her, and I just thinking, okay, I did not see that coming. So I watched it from outside, which basically meant listen to it.
Right.
Anyway, I think Mike did an incredible job, and there was a big team of people, obviously, that did an incredible job. And I think told the story very well, and I'm glad we did it.
Yeah.
I'm glad he did it.
Well, sometimes people take the story and run with it when it's not really, you know?
Yeah.
So it's always good to know that the subjects of the documentary are behind it. And I felt, as someone who's obviously a fan of the Hip, worked in classic rock radio 20 years, so spent a lot of time listening to your music, interviewing you guys, that it was interesting for me still learning a little bit more about the behind-the-scenes stuff. So for those Hip fans that probably felt like they knew everything, I'm sure they learned a little bit more and felt a little bit closer to you and what happened and transpired over the years. And then, of course, with the loss of Gord, 10 years since that last concert in Market Square, we were in Market Square, you were at the arena, but August will be 10 years. Does it feel like a decade's gone by?
I don't know.
Yes and no.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. It feels like, that was more recent.
Yeah.
So it's hard to believe that it's been 10 years. Yeah, it was funny. I just stayed at the K-Rock Center, which is what it was called, so this is legal to say.
Yes, it was at the time.
all day. Yeah. Went early, and I stayed there all day, and then we soundchecked, and okay, this is coming. Then someone came in the dressing room and said, there's a whole bunch of people in Market Square. And we were like, what, really? I don't think we even knew that they were showing it. Or streaming it over there.
Yeah.
Because we knew about it.
Oh, yeah. I was broadcasting from there.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Well,
but you guys didn't know about that.
Well, we'd come from Ottawa. We knew the CBC was there, and we knew that they were broadcasting it.
Right.
Maybe I knew, but I don't think so. Or maybe I thought it was casual. But anyway, this guy's like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of people. And I said, really? And he's like a lot of people. And I was like, wow. And we were all kind of like, oh, wow, that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we forgot about all the people there. Sorry, people.
Well, you had other things to focus on.
Well, it was a big day.
Yeah. We had a crowd.
Okay.
We also forgot about the filming. You know, even though there's lots of cameras around, it's the crowd. You can't help it. Like, so we played to the crowd and with the crowd, kind of forgetting really a lot of stuff. Like it was potentially our last show. We didn't know that for sure, but we all kind of knew it. Yeah, hard to believe it's been that long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think we could have done any better.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Speaking of K-Rock, it was the 25th anniversary of the radio station. A couple weeks ago, I saw you down at the Ale House.
Yes.
Yeah, we had a little chat. Unfortunately, I had to leave a bit early before you got on stage, but how did that go?
It was good. Got up with the Trues, and, you know, we've known them a long time, and so it was fun to get up with them, and we did a couple of hip tunes, and you know, True's very nice of them to do it, but a very good choice to celebrate K-Rock's anniversary, because you know, they've just been, you know, K-Rock's played them a lot, they've done a lot of things with K-Rock, and so yeah, it was a nice celebration. And with the time thing, 25 years, I was like, that was 25 years
ago,
because it was quite memorable for everyone in the town, I think.
Yeah,
and right there from the very start.
Yeah, he was, because I started in Kingston Radio the same year that K-Rock launched on the air.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was 2001.
It was a thing. Mm-hmm. 2001.
Yeah,
I didn't even do that math.
Yeah, wild, eh?
But it was a big thing. There was an energy about it, and then obvious energy with G. Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was fun too. It's nice to do. You know, I try and get asked to do things, and in general, I would say yes if it's just like playing a song or getting up with a band.
Mm-hmm.
I got up with a local band in Iqaluit the other day, and a couple of throat singers.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice.
And
Did you tell them you're a throat singer too? Or not? Did you learn anything? Did they show you anything?
No, they were just...
That'd be too neat.
They were wee little girls that looked like about, to me, I have no idea, 17?
Okay.
18? And it's a very cool sound.
Yeah.
So I did a couple songs with this band. One of them, they did a version of Ahead by a Century in their Inuit language. So I sang the first half, and then the singer sang in his language, Ahead by a Century.
Cool.
And we also did, they had a hit, just Inuit language hit up there, like everybody knows it. So I played with them on that one too. Then I had them back up for Wheat Kings. The whole band at the end of my set, and the whole band and the throat singers, and quieted right down just before the last verse to actually show the people, because it was 50 of us were up there, ex-NHLers and big, you know, Leafs alumni and all that, and just to kind of show them what it sounded like, and it was really cool. Like, anyway, I asked them how old they were, and one said 20, and I said, oh, okay. How old are you? 38. And I thought they were like 18. Anyway. So that kind of thing, you got to look at it like it's an honor to be asked. And, you know, with the K-Rock thing or anything that comes up in Kingston, I generally would open to the idea.
Real quick, flip side of that, because I know this will sound wild, but sometimes when you do something for a long time and then people look at it from the outside, they only see the positives, but there's a lot of work that goes behind what you do as being an entertainer, even something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're traveling, you know what I mean? There's a lot that is involved. So sometimes I feel like there's people that don't understand. They'll see like, oh, you don't appreciate the things you're doing if you're not like rah, rah, rah. But there really becomes that aspect of like, it's work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I've felt that come at me recently where I was doing a comedy show and I was feeling a little bit stressed, and people are like, but it's comedy. And you're like, yeah, but do you know what like goes into that? So like, there's a lot of work that you do behind the scenes for something that someone might say, oh, what a wonderful opportunity and thing for you to experience. But they don't always understand everything that goes on around that going into it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, if you're in the hip, you're lucky enough to have a crew that is sort of setting it up and, you know, show up and your guitar's in tune and your amp works perfectly. Everything's great. You know, when you do these things on your own, a lot of work goes into just making sure you have the good strings and a guitar that works and a pickup that works. And I played a little gig with Pat Murphy. Do you know guys yeah. know Pat Murphy?
Yeah.
We were in Costa Rica and whatever. The girls came back and I wasn't there, but, or no, Pat and Joanne came back and said, you're playing a gig tonight. And I didn't have, like, I had a 12 string.
Right.
You know, if I knew that there was going to be a gig, I wouldn't have brought a 12 string. anyway, it was an uphill battle all afternoon.
Right. Yep.
For both Murph and I.
Yep.
You know, to get, because they never had anyone on a mic there. So anyway, it was just like 5 or 6 hours of a sweat fest just to get ready to play a half hour.
Mm-hmm. But you're like, I'm you're in right. Costa Rica. When does my time to relax?
Yeah, exactly. But no, you're right. It is work.
It is work. Yeah.
And it's work on, it's mental work.
Mm-hmm.
Mental work too. I would guess, especially in comedy, but it's mental work for me to be out front singing, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Not a pile of mental work in the hip, but enough. You know, you want to get it right. So if you want to get it right, that's going to be work.
Yep. You yes, know, that's
it's
true.
Not like,
yes.
Yep. You know, you can trust your whatever talent or your yourself to do its best, but it's still mental work to get up there. Mm-hmm. You're on at 9. Okay, from 8 till 9, that's work.
Yeah.
You know, just sitting there waiting.
Yep.
You know, trying to control your mind without letting it go blank.
And your breath.
Yeah, exactly. And your breath, all of it.
Breath
yeah.
is so important, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Paul, I wanted to ask you about, ask you something that I asked Rob a few years ago about your relationship with the community.
Mm.
Because anytime I talk, you know, friends from out of town will ask about the hip. And right. and I'll say, oh, they're just out in the community. And, you know, for the most part, nobody bothers them. It's just that's where they live. Yeah, I'm just curious to get your perspective on that. Because you and I believe Johnny lives in Toronto these days, right?
Yeah, Johnny's in Toronto.
Yeah.
Gord Sinclair's here and Robbie and I.
Yeah, it feels like the three of you have always been part of the community. Like, was that deliberate? Is it just sort of like, this is where I live, of course?
Yeah, I think it just... Yeah, I think it came naturally. Early on, as we started to get more known, we felt, you know, I think a responsibility as Kingstonians to help Kingston. And we had the ability and the privilege of being able to raise money
mm-hmm.
And leave it here. So I think that came pretty naturally, too. We watched other bands like Rush do that. But that was early on, so we had many, many, many chances to do some good. And raise some money for some things, places, organizations that needed it. So, yeah, that's natural. And then the community part, like, as far, I'm pretty comfortable. I mean, Bo Sinclair and I, we're half kidding, but Robbie's to be avoided walking downtown. You know, it's like everybody, you know, it's Rob Baker. You know, he's got the hair.
He's got the hair.
Much more distinctive look, yeah.
He's got
yeah.
the beautiful boots. He's all... You know, a nice blazer, like he's not, he's something. And so someone will stop him and Sinclair and I will just keep walking. They won't notice. And we'll be like, okay, meet you there, Robbie.
He told us a couple little stories, too, about some interactions with the public.
Oh, yeah. He's had a pile of them. I mean, it happens to me. Certainly much more after the documentary.
Yeah.
Well, and after the tour and the whole, you know, yeah. but especially the documentary, yeah. I found.
I think because you reach people that aren't just music fans. Like,
mm-hmm.
some people, I was talking to someone the other day, and they're like, I don't really like music. I find it annoying. And I was like, what? And but it made me realize, like, not everyone sits and listens to music like I do or right. appreciates it or loves it or plays it. You know what I mean? Like, some yeah. of us are extreme music fans or creators. So, yeah.
And they're still around. But maybe, you know, a good percentage of the people that stop me on the street, 100%. Positive. No one's ever said anything our whole career.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gord Downie wasn't as lucky because sometimes people just want to knock him down a peg. Like, you really think you're something or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not often, but once in a while, but that never happened to me. They all just want to say, hey, I saw this show or your music meant a lot to me. You know, it's all very kind, positive things. Mm. So I don't mind getting approached at all. But I was going to say there's a certain percentage, pretty good one, of people out of town visiting. It's happened quite a few times where it's like they've come to town because they're big hip fans just to check the town out, check our street out.
And then you're there.
Yeah, and then they run in and they're like, oh my God. And but it's not constant. Like I can walk downtown and just blend right in, fit right in. I mean, I know a lot of people too. So like that work in stores I go to or that work in the bars or at J. Piggy or at Red House downtown. And it feels pretty normal. And I think that's what we really wanted. I think that's one of the keys to our success is everyone wanted to be normal and not, you know, move to LA, of course, or do anything like that. You know, a few of us moved to Toronto, but that was more for our girlfriend's work at the time. Yeah, so we're pretty normal upbringing. I think that how all the parents were together. It's kind of rare with five people. And supportive. I like normal a lot. And I think everyone else does. We love Kingston. Gordon Robbie have never lived anywhere else. I was in Toronto for 8 years or so, but it's very comfortable here actually.
Yep. Good.
We talked about Kingston, the community. We talked about the concert being almost 10 years. John, you had mentioned something to me as right before the interview started about, I hadn't even heard of this yet.
So, there had been talk about, you know, with the city and everything about, oh, it's the 10th anniversary of the last hip show. Should there be some sort of celebration? And just yesterday, they announced there is going to be something. I don't think they've released any details about that yet. Paul, are you involved in that or do you care?
We want the inside scoop.
I am not involved in it.
Okay.
Do I care? I care about us, the band, mm-hmm. but I am quite still reeling that it's 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of just odd, surreal, that it was that long ago. I've seen the celebration plans like a few weeks ago. It was winter, so it was a few weeks ago, maybe January. Joanne and I went to a meeting where they're putting, you know, new housing in a neighborhood, and the neighborhood didn't like it. And, you know, they're trying their best, the city, but the city reps were there. And the first guy that spoke, it was a great big circle. And I was just there as an observer. But there's a place a couple doors down from us downtown. They go from there and step up to living, like in a home, like maybe 8 people. Mm-hmm. And there's a few of these homes being put in neighborhoods. And, you know, I think the citizens were where it was, were probably, to be fair, they were frustrated at the lack of information that they had been receiving from the city. So fair enough. But the first guy gets up and says, you know, this party for the hip, $350,000 you're spending that, and we can't get a light back there. But not that. I was just kind of sort of
head down.
Just kind of like, he came up to me after the whole meeting. A lot of people spoke. It was a long meeting, and including Joanne. I didn't say a word. I just said, my wife's going to speak for us. Because it's a very positive experience we've had with them, even in the step down, where they're learning how to, or continuing to learn and show that they can get along with people and they can contribute and all this kind of stuff that you need to do if you're living with a bunch of people in a house. So we have an excellent experience with them. Joanne especially, she goes over there and knows all of them. I know some of them. Anyway, this guy did apologize after that meeting. And he's like, I'm a big hip fan. I was just kind of highlighting a point. And I didn't know you were here. And I said, you know, honestly, I'm totally fine with it. I'm not involved in any of that thing.
Not my project. Yeah. Not my circus.
So I haven't checked in on that, to be honest with you.
Okay.
On what's going on or if in there, what it all is. I think they took that money away I think I read that.
From what I know, yeah, it was originally proposed $350,000. It sounds like it's down to $100,000. So
okay.
That guy will have a light bulb now, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean,
should pay for a few of them.
No, I'm glad. I even, you know, because I read the $350,000. I was like,
what
are you going to spend that on?
So well, I'm like, sure some of that money is going to come back through tourism and things like that, but it does seem like a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear, though, that it's not as much. And I did read that, too, that and didn't even think of that. That, yeah, tourism will benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, everyone down there benefits. All the stores.
All those restaurants that we like so much. Yes.
Yeah. So, yes. It's okay, but I don't know what's happening, and I know I'm not getting a cent of that 100 grand.
Just to make that clear.
You heard it here first.
Oh, that's good.
I wanted to ask about Kingston Live's all about the Kingston music scene, and I wanted to ask you how you feel, you know, as someone who's been in the scene, and, you know, and certainly connected to it for so long, how do you feel the scene has changed, and how has it stayed the same, or has it?
Yeah, good question.
From your point of view.
Yeah, good question. Tough question. You know, there's something a little bit in the water here, I think. You know, there's a lot of musicians, and there is some opportunity, which I think was the case when we were back then. We had our circuit of bars that we played, the Manor, the Commodore, the Terrapin, which is now the Toucan. They're still running bands. The other two places aren't here. There are a few spots to play, and there's lots of musicians that I know and that are good and either have a regular show going at the Toucan. There's musicians coming in, so it's hard to describe the scene. I'm just glad that there's still a lot of, or a good amount of live music.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough sort of thing. The rule used to be that if you can't get a crowd in your hometown, there's not much point in going elsewhere. But I don't think that's the case anymore. It may have been the case when because we had a crowd here at the Manor, certainly, mm-hmm. and at the Queen's Pub at Alfie's. But those were bigger rooms. So we got a crowd, and then it stood to reason that, okay, well, if we go to Belleville or Cornwall or Ottawa, Perth, wherever, and play a couple of nights, we should be able to draw them in. You know, we felt like we were good enough. And, yeah, difficult here. You know, Toucan always has a crowd. There's beautiful bands that go through there and in there. So it's just tough to judge. But everyone tries to hit the road, tries to sort of get something going.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, there's a lot of stuff out there, and it's a lot more than there used to be. I know you can post things, and maybe you get lucky and get something going on TikTok or maybe a little video, but it's, we would never have done that if we felt like we were a live band. And then, you know, hey, Much Music came along. And guess what? Now the whole country can see us at the same time instead of us having to cross it as unknowns kind of thing. But yeah, it's a big question. But I know there's a lot of good musicians here.
Certainly, yes. Mm-hmm. And we've talked with many of them.
Yes, I'm sure you have.
Yes, yes.
And we will continue to.
Well, when we started the podcast, there was this question of, can we keep this going? And the deeper you get into it, it's a rabbit hole. It's just, it seems like an endless well of talent in this city.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps growing. There's all these, you know, younger people who come out of the woodworks. We've been doing this for almost 8 years now, and we've seen bands start and develop and get an audience in that time. And
some of them finish.
and that's the other thing is it's, and you sort of touched on this, it's a very challenging time in the industry as well. And you see bands who, you know, you talk about Much Music and you had these sort of clear steps of this is where we want to be. We want to get to this arena. We want to do this kind of thing. And I feel these days those steps aren't as well defined. You know, things like, let's get a big record deal and that sort of thing. We've seen in the last several months, you know, the Wilderness called it quits. At the time of this recording, Oak Ridge Ave is having their last show tomorrow.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Yes. So it's a challenging time, but certainly still no shortage of talent.
Yeah, for sure. It's tough to keep a band together, that's for sure. Kind of almost especially a young band, because you'll have different sort of goals and dreams, and finally someone says, listen, I can't do this anymore. And Okerjav, I judged a Battle of the Bands years ago, Battle of the Bands. There are three judges, and I voted for them first, but they came second. The other two had them second. So I met those guys a few times, but I didn't know they were finishing up.
Yes, yes. I'm sure they'll all do things individually. I know at least some of them are already. But
Right.
It's just, it makes you a little sad regardless of the reason when that happens. Yeah.
And I keep in touch with it a little bit. You know, I'm not necessarily going out and seeing bands very often, but, you know, Greg Ball plays around a lot and he knows a lot of other musicians like Ruben DeGroot. And so I hear things about how things are going. You know, it's so funny because they could be having this conversation in Windsor. I don't know. Oh, Windsor's so great. There's so many musicians here.
We wondered that,
maybe it's
too.
Like this everywhere. You know?
Well, something that I want to do, we still haven't figured this out, but I would love to do a collaborative podcast with another music city and have like a our music town can beat up your music town kind of discussion.
Okay.
But it hasn't happened yet.
Great idea, though.
Yeah, we'll just keep tooting our own horn and, you know, and thinking we're great without looking anywhere else.
Yeah, we're the best. It's so obvious.
Paul, what's next for you? What's in the future?
Well, we're doing, so far, I think, four festivals in the summer. I only like playing festivals in the summer or the fall or the spring. But I don't enjoy playing, say, a theater or a club. And just, you know, checking in on, okay, we're just at 400 seats. We got 400 to sell, and it's already Thursday. You know, it just stresses me out. So a festival, you just show up. They're in charge of the crowd. You play your set. You get paid. It's great. And an outdoor festival is kind of the most fun thing to play. So we have about four of them so far this summer. Edmonton, Winnipeg, Gravenhurst.
That was my question. Anything drivable?
Will we see you at any of the Kingston festivals this season?
Excuse me. Not that I know of. I see there's a big festival. I think Verge, I think Verge booked it. And,
yeah, Road Trip.
Yeah,
Road
Trip. September.
Yes.
Which is a band that I'm new friends with and worked with a little bit. Tiny Horse are playing.
They're great.
They're on that bill. They're really good. I knew that they wouldn't ask my band to play it because it's like 2 weeks after the hip is going to be sort of, you know,
recognized.
Yeah, whatever
somehow.
They do. Yeah, whatever they do. So I think it made sense. I was not surprised that they never approached. Wasn't surprised at all and totally fine with it. So, you know, it'd be nice to have a Kingston gig. We haven't really talked about it or thought about it, but we probably will think about it. We'll think about it.
Yeah.
Okay. And we probably will talk about it. But that doesn't necessarily lead to a show or anything, but
okay. Well,
we'll see.
If something happens, let us know.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, please.
Paul, it was wonderful having you here. Thank you so much for coming in and taking the time to speak to us.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This has been Kingston Live. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it, tell a friend, or subscribe on your platform of choice. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Soundwise. Hosted by John Sanfilippo and Ange Stever. Writing and research by Peter Sanfilippo. Executive producer Rob Howard. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.
Monday. When traffic's a nightmare. When the workplace is hectic. When your boss calls you in for a meeting. When nature isn't on your side. There's only one thing you can do.
But no need to wake up the neighbors. Tune in every Monday night from 11 p.m. to midnight for Shed Progressions, where we play an hour of cool jazz to help you relax after a long day. Again, that's Shed Progressions every Monday night at 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
We're not afraid to get a little funky.